Well, howdy, folks. Welcome to the CoasterGallery.com podcast. Today, we're going to talk about an amusement park in Australia, a unique record-setting roller coaster type that they built two of and then never heard of them again, and then a photography tip that will be able to improve your photography for any type of camera that you use. So, as usual, my name is Joel, and along with me is my brother Jeff. Say hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
Thank you for the lame punchline that it may become our trademark. I set them up and you knock them down. Anyway, so I want to talk about Dream World in Australia for a minute. Jeff, you've never been to Australia, correct?
No, I can't say I have.
So my Dream World experience was a very interesting mix. It was raining that day, so the weather was pretty bad, and unfortunately, that meant a couple of the coasters were closed and I never got on them. On the other hand, I almost had the park to myself. This park is not only known for some neat thrill rides and a water park, they have some amazing animals. They've got a koala world with like 60 koalas. They've got a tiger display. I'm thinking, okay, lame little tiger show. It was amazing. There were a dozen tigers, and they're doing all these neat exhibits and behaviors, and they're swimming and climbing trees and stuff I never knew tigers could do. So just fascinating. I went to the Australian wildlife show that they had, saw all sorts of freaky things I'd never heard of, like the critically endangered bilby. You ever heard of a bilby?
No, I can't say I have.
Yeah, I thought that was something from Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's just incredible. All sorts of marsupials I'd never heard of. My personal favorite, though, was the sheep shearing exhibition. And every day, they shear sheep, a real gosh honest live sheep. And it was kind of comedic. It was set up like these two little kind of, I want to use the term country bumpkin. I don't know if that's right in Australia, but these little guys from the outback were out there, and they're kind of all shucks and how's, you know, all these neat little Australian terms I almost needed a translator to understand. And they showed how they sheared sheep and rounded them up and had the little dog and everything. My favorite part of it was they got a guy from the audience who was somewhere from Japan, China, Hong Kong, not really sure where in Asia, but he didn't speak a lick of English. So here's these guys speaking very hard to understand Australian or English to you and me. And then here's the guy that didn't understand it. And they're trying to get him to help shear the sheep. And it was just unintentionally hilarious and one of the highlights of my trip.
Sounds funny.
It was a really cool park. And like I said, unfortunately, I didn't get on Tower of Terror. I didn't get on the Intamin motor coaster. Do you know anything about these little Intamin launched rides, Jeff?
You know, I've seen them. I've seen a video. There's a brand new one that just opened somewhere in Europe, I think you went to, before they had it. And they look really fun. Every time I see one, I said, man, I wish I could take my kids on that. That looks awesome.
Well, it's another one of these rides that just proves that you don't have to be big and fast to be fun. I've ridden a couple of the Zamperla motor coasters. The only Intamin one I did was also in Australia at SeaWorld. Little Ski-Doo jet ski-shaped ride vehicles. And it was a blast. It's one of these things that, you know, it's not that tall. The one in Dream World is only 7 meters high, which converts to how many feet is 7 meters, Jeff?
Oh, 24 maybe?
Yeah, I was going to say 20-something. So it's a very short ride, and it's not even that fast, 30, 40 miles an hour. It's like 60-something kilometers per hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get on the one in Dream World, but the one in SeaWorld was just a blast. So I'm looking forward to seeing maybe more of those. This one was the hydraulic powering of tires, of just pneumatic road tires, as opposed to something like Dragster or King Deca, which is hydraulics pulling on a cable. They had a couple other, let me just finish my trip report real quick, and then we'll talk about Tower of Terror specifically. But the other coasters there, they had a little Vekoma Junior Hang and Bang that's gone through several names. It was now it's Escape from Madagascar. It was Runaway, Rugrats Runaway Reptar.
There you go.
There's your tongue twister. Man, that's tough. And then it was Skyrocket or something for a year. They've rethemed the area a couple times, so it's gone through some changes. They have an aerodynamics looping coaster that was the one that kind of killed Luna Park in Sydney. All the noise complaints when it opened up shut the park down. Do you know anything about that ride specifically, Jeff?
No, other than what you just said. They had a small aero multi-looper, and it was kind of, I guess, some sort of like boardwalk-style park maybe, but the neighbors complained, and it led to their downfall.
Well, I went to Luna Park, and it is really surrounded by a lot of condos and apartments and businesses, so I can understand why noise would be a concern. Although an aero looping coaster, it's not that loud of a ride. So,
well, you know what I think it is involved. Aero has loud chains. Arrow has loud chains. I wonder if that was it. I mean, they don't roar like a B&M, but their chains are just brutal sometimes.
That could be true. That could be part of the problem. I hadn't thought about that. One of the interesting things was it was designed for the park in Sydney and the terrain and the rides, and when they plunked it, it took 100 and something, like 150, 160 truckloads to move it. It's about a 12-hour drive up the coast. And when they installed it at the Gold Coast, it's kind of out of place because it was built for the terrain in Sydney. And
sure.
So it's kind of weird, and some of the hills are nowhere near the ground, but it was an okay ride. The other unusual ride there, they have a standing but not operating Eureka Mine ride that was a weird little Australian-built Mad Mouse that was enclosed indoors and a little bit of themed. And it's been standing but not operating since about 2008. If you go to CoasterGallery.com and look at the pictures, you could see there's a couple of hints of track you could see on the outside, but most of it was inside. And if you go, here's again the shameless plug, go to CoasterGallery.com and look at the pictures of Dreamworld, Australia's Dreamworld. The weather stunk, so not my best photography. We are going to talk photography here in a little bit, but let's talk about Tower of Terror. Jeff, can you rewind us back to the mid-1990s and kind of set up what happened there and at Magic Mountain in California?
Sure. Well, you know, this was really incredible at the time, and you really have to put yourself in the mindset of what things were like pre-internet, where roller coaster information was hard to come by. It was even sometimes hard to find out if there was a theme park in a region other than if you were in the area stopping where they had travel brochures. You'd be like, hey, look, there's a place here that has roller coasters. There was no, you know, way, even especially for the general public. And really, for people like us, the only way to get information was on the Ace magazines, you know, the paper publications. So this was probably about, what, like 94 or so. It's a couple years after Magnum, you know, 200 feet tall hypercoasters by Arrow. They'd built the big one out in England, which was a little bit taller, again by Arrow. And then they were probably building at the time the Desperado out in Vegas-ish area that was, again, a little bit taller, but that was it, you know, after Magnum. And those were still, you know, huge rides. And then out of nowhere, Magic Mountain announced Superman the Escape. Here's a 400-foot tall roller coaster that's launched that goes 100 miles an hour. And you also have to remember, the only launched coasters before this time were the Schwarzkopf shuttle loops that, you know, those were still pretty uncommon. A lot of people have probably never seen one or heard of one. And I bet those go, what, maybe 40, 45 miles an hour?
I was just going to say they're not very fast. And the interesting technology, the original ones in the late 70s literally dropped a giant weight. They had a tower and a weight that they would hoist up and connect to a cable, and it would drop and accelerate the train. The later ones had a mechanical flywheel that I forget, like 10, 20,000 pounds worth of weight in it, and it would spin very fast, and then it had some kind of
a clutch.
Yeah, it had a clutch. It had some kind of transmission that would engage and accelerate the train. Again, a fun ride, but the acceleration was, like you said, 0 to 40-ish in, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 seconds. So a fun acceleration, but nothing like what these guys came up with when Intamin built the one in Australia and the one in California. So here they could say, okay, here's a 400-foot, 100-mile-an-hour ride, and then tell me what happened next.
Well, you know, and also you got to remember, this was really probably the first announced use of any sort of electromagnetic launch technology. So that was brand new, too. So, I mean, this thing's a bombshell announcement. I mean, it's just people can't believe it. It's really radical and new and different. I mean, our father, who is a hardcore roller coaster junkie, I remember he says, oh, I don't know about that. You know, here's a guy who's ridden hundreds of coasters, but this thing was so far out, he was almost intimidated by it. So, you know, they start building this thing, getting it ready, and along with coasters that were slated to open not too long after this, like you had the Mr. Freezes and the Batman and Robin the Chiller, this thing had some serious growing pains, serious problems getting it to run. And in the end, it opened about a year late. And the technology was so new with, you know, all the electrical elements of getting these linear synchronous motors to run, and then the computers to control it and make that kind of magnetic wave for the trained to surf down, it was extremely difficult for them to pull off. And it, like I said, it almost opened about a year late, and Superman actually opened second. And most people didn't even know that the one in Australia was being built. I remember one day I was sitting at home as probably a freshman in high school or something, getting ready for school, and the Today Show's on. We're going to show today the first 100-mile-an-hour roller coaster opened up. And I'm like, oh, the Superman
California
must have opened
surprise.
Up. And then they're like, today in Sydney, Australia, or whatever. I'm like, oh, didn't know they had one over there. And so, much to Magic Mountain's probably disappointment, your park there in Australia beat them out.
Yeah, Dream World held the record for the tallest and the fastest coaster. The fastest coaster was only for, I think, like three months until the one at Magic Mountain opened. I want to go back real quickly. Talked about the linear synchronous motors and linear induction motors, two variations on a theme. I'm not going to geek out too much. What they are permanent magnets installed in the car, and then you have electromagnets in the track, and they have to turn on and off at various times to either attract or repel the car. And to get the timing of that is very difficult. It also takes a tremendous amount of energy. I know when I took a tour of the Batman and Robin chiller ride in New Jersey, and they talked about it taking like $2,000 of electricity every morning to get everything up and running and charge all the capacitors and charge everything. So it's a tremendous load. And you know what happened when they built Wicked Twister at Cedar Point, don't you?
Well, they did what most parks do, is that you basically need to get a dedicated line run from your local power plant to the ride.
Exactly. And then one of the interesting things on the Magic Mountain ride, it's actually two identical side-by-side tracks. The one on Australia is just the one track. The nice publicity shots that they filmed there at Magic Mountain show the two trains going side-by-side. I'm not sure that ever happened more than once photography. In fact, they only operated one side of that thing for the better part of the early 2000s. So it's to brown out half of L.A. to launch two of them at once was too much. So,
well, and the other thing that I would imagine that dictated this is, in the end, and this will we're probably getting ahead of ourselves on where this is going, I don't think it was actually ever very popular. It was a gimmick, and the ride was, you know, it wasn't all that crazy and thrilling. It was a super gentle launch, and it's like takes like over 7 seconds to hit that 100. Whereas, say, today, the SNS launch coaster in Japan hits 118 in less than 2 seconds.
Right, and Dodonpa there in Japan, is the trivia, is that's the one that it broke Tower of Terror's speed record. It was like 4 or 5 years after it was after Tower of Terror was built. But, yeah, so you talked about Dad being scared because you think, oh, 400 feet, and you think 100 miles an hour. But it's actually a fairly tame ride. It's a nice, smooth, sustained acceleration. Now, there's a lot of airflow at 100 miles an hour if you're sitting, especially in front. But the whole thing from launch to stop is maybe, what, 20 seconds? Because you launch horizontally, you pitch up 90 degrees, you go straight up the tower, you fall backwards, and then you roll back towards the launch platform. There's a nice little pull of G as you're pulling up, and then it's just floating as you're decelerating going up the tower and then reaching zero velocity and then going back down the tower. You're weightless, they claim, for like 6 seconds. It's a very pleasant experience. It's very rewritable, but you have a 15-passenger car, or when they made the one in Australia backwards, there are only 14 seats on it, and there's only one car, so it's a very low hourly capacity for a very short ride. So I think, you know, it was cool and it was, you know, record-setting, but commercially it was a flop. They built these two in the mid-90s and then no more.
Well, and it was also it was very expensive to build. It's probably extremely expensive to operate. But here's the other thing is that probably doesn't help the ride is, you know, Magic Mountain made a big deal about 400 feet, 100 miles an hour. But what most people don't realize is that is just the height of the tower.
Exactly.
Magic Mountain is a terrain park.
Well,
it's
mountain.
A mountain.
Yeah.
And the launch track is flat on the ground where the station is. And where the tower lies, there's almost a 100-foot extension to get down to where the ground is there. So the actual maximum distance of height from flat to peak of ascent is something like 320 some feet. I mean, we're talking like an 80-foot difference, and that is the maximum. And outside of media day when the thing opened and the Guinness people were there with a radar gun, that thing did not go 100 miles an hour.
No, it's been way down. I'm embarrassed to admit I have not been to Magic Mountain in about 6 or 7 years. It's on my list of places I want to go this summer, but I'm going to too many other places. I probably won't get around to it. But anyway, I was there last time, and yeah, this is anemic launch, and it goes halfway, two-thirds of the way up the tower.
Maybe two-thirds of the way. And so you're talking maybe two-thirds of the way up 320-some feet. So the thing was probably rarely cracking, you know, 80, 90 miles an hour, and probably rarely exceeding a 300-foot drop in terms of what it actually did. So, you know, it never quite performed to its full potential, and it was also very nice marketing using the terrain that they had to build it at Magic Mountain, that they had a 400-foot tower, but it never was.
One of the things I do on Coaster Gallery, I'm very big about the history and the trivia about each coaster. I like saying how tall it is and how long it is and what kind of trains. One of the things I specifically don't do is list the top speed of most of the coasters, because a couple things. Number one, like you said on this one, they can kind of dial it up and dial it down, that they could control it. So it might have been 100 miles an hour at one point, but not too often. The other thing is just the conventional chain lift dropping coaster, it varies on how, you know, the wind and the temperature and the weight of the train, and there's just so many variables. And then the other thing is parks tend to lie. Oh, it goes 90 miles an hour. Well, that's just some PR guy trying to get good publicity. One time I was in Texas, and I was in the parking lot at Six Flags Over Texas, and it's a couple different sections of the parking lot, and the park was fairly empty, so one section was deserted. I just drove over there to get by the big Giovanola. What's the name of it? Is it Goliath?
Yeah,
the big orange Giovanola. And you know,
or Titan, maybe.
Oh, Texas Titan. I think it's Titan. Well, you know, go to coastergallery.com and look it up for me when you get a chance, everybody, and then write me and tell me what an idiot I am, because I don't know the name of the coaster. But anyway, the big orange Giovanola there in the parking lot. I'm there with my camera, and I'm waiting for the train. So, you know, I take a picture, and then you got another 4 or 5 minutes till the next train. So I'm hanging out there for a while, and as I do that, a cop pulls up next to me and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know, I run this website, and I'm taking pictures, and I'm, you know, waiting for the next train to show up." She said, "That's fine. You know, some days I take, you know, when it's quiet here, I take out my radar gun and I clock it, see how fast it's going." I'm like, "Oh, cool. That's awesome. You know, how fast is it going?" I don't remember exactly. It was maybe 90 something miles an hour. But she said, "Oh, it varies. You know, on a real hot day, it'll be faster." So, you know, there's just so many variables. I don't say how fast coasters go.
Sure.
So fast forward a couple years after this one opens in Australia, Intamin decides, you know what, we're going to up it, and what do they do to it?
Down in Australia, I mean, and this is very, very smart, because it is a giant, their tower is a giant cylindrical pole, like one of their giant drop free fall rides. And so what do? They bolted some free fall track to the side and installed a free fall ride on the existing roller coaster tower.
There are actually two of them, one on each side. There are eight passengers side. So, and again, I didn't get on it, which is a bummer. But you take, you know, it's a fairly basic ride. You have a cable to pull up the gondola, you let go of it, and then it's kind of like the launch mechanism. It's dealing with magnets, although the magnets are there on the train and the track. They're just permanent magnets. And just the magnetic interaction slows the train down. It's a fail-safe deal. I mean, there's no electricity required or anything. It's a really neat system and a nice way to kind of strap on another ride to an existing ride. So that was cool. Now, Magic Mountain just did that, what, a year or two ago? And
I think last year, yeah.
Yeah, same idea. They added, and that was what, Krypton something or other? They've changed
something like that. Yeah, or is it, no, it's Lex Luthor or Drop a Doom or something like that.
And then it used to be Superman the Escape. Now it's Superman Krypton Blast or something.
Something like that.
They too flipped the coaster backwards recently. So both of these are now launching you facing backward, and then as you're going up and down the tower, you're facing straight down, which I'm sure is a neat little gag.
Very cool.
Cool. Well, there you have it. Two almost unique rides on different hemispheres. Fun, but not really successful rides. I hope to get back to Magic Mountain sometime this summer. We'll see. I hate to say exactly where I'm going, but I'll throw this out to the listeners. I find myself this weekend with one day off in Massachusetts, and I'm wondering what I should do. I have this one day off, and I could either go back to Six Flags New England and see the giant inverted boomerang, the former deja vu that they moved up there, or I could go to, and here's where I'm going to sound like a moron, is it Canobie Lake or Canobie Lake?
I think it's Canobie
Lake. I don't even know how to pronounce the name of this park, but it's a new park to me, and it would be three new coasters. So if what should I do? Should I go to the place where I was a year and a half ago, or go to
Nah.
Okay. Let me ask the listeners. Send me an email, Joel at Coaster Gallery. You can reach me at Coaster Gallery on Twitter, Facebook.com/Coaster Gallery. There's even a Coaster Gallery G Plus account, although it's pretty quiet over there. Let me know. What do you want to see? Do you want to see the Deja Vu pictures since it was relocated to Six Flags New England? Or do you want to see this Canobie, whatever it is, Lake Park? Do it soon, though, because I'm going up there in a few days. As always, I'm thrilled to get your feedback on what you think about this podcast. Is it too much about the roller coasters? Is it too much about the photography? Is it too much about the music? Well, you know what? We're not doing any music this week, but maybe you miss it, so let me know. Let me tell you what I want to talk about next week, Jeff. Here's a little teaser in the middle of the podcast. I want to talk about curves and hills and spikes and slopes and profile views of these things going up and down. What am I going to talk about next week, Jeff?
Strippers.
That would be there's probably more people to want to hear about that. But sadly, no.
Okay.
Your second guess.
Roller coasters.
Sadly, you're wrong with that, too. We're going to talk about photography and specifically the histogram. What's a histogram, Jeff? Do you know?
My wife had one of those last time she went to the OB's office.
Exactly. He's the perfect straight man, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. No, it's the little graph on your camera or in your editing program, Lightroom, Aperture, Photoshop, what have you. And we're going to talk about how to use it, what's a good one, what's a bad one. So those little funky little curves that you see on your camera after you take the picture, we're going to talk about that. But for now, we're going to go back to the last podcast, which was sadly a long time ago. We talked about, if you have a zoom lens, is it better to zoom with your feet and walk in and zoom way out and take a wide shot? Or is it better to walk way back and then zoom in tight? So, Jeff, if you're taking a picture of a person, your kid, what have you, is it better to get close in their face and shoot wide? Or is it better to take a bunch of steps back and zoom in real tight on them?
Well, I saw it changes kind of the focus of the background.
Exactly. And that's one of the cool things with a nice camera that you can't do on something like your cell phone, that as you zoom in, you get that nice, narrow depth of field. And depth of field, we're going to talk about in another podcast, but just the brief discussion is, how much of the picture's in focus? If you take a picture with your iPhone, pretty much everything is in focus. But if you have the nice zoom lens and you zoom way in, as you zoom in, now you get the things in the foreground and the background might be out of focus, then that's kind of a really nice look, especially if you have a lousy background that you don't want people to really notice. You want them to focus on the subject. So there's my tip for you. If you shoot with anything that has a zoom lens, go ahead, if you can, take some steps back and zoom in that nice blurry background or bokeh, if you're a Japanese, that bokeh, although some people pronounce it bokeh, they're wrong. It's bokeh, trust me. That nice fuzzy bokeh is a really cool look. The other thing, Jeff, do you have one of these little phones with a camera? Like I have one that's a iPhone. How do you pronounce that?
Yes, one of those fruit phones.
Yeah, the fruity iPhone, whatever. It's got that FaceTime thing.
Yes.
When I take when I'm looking at my own picture on the camera, have you done that? What is that do to your face?
It messes with the kind of the proportions.
Exactly. You and I both have kind of the receding hairline, big forehead thing going on.
Mm.
And, yeah, I know. Ouch. How's the Propecia going?
Yeah, I haven't taken it.
Well, there you go. When you're really close with a wide angle lens, it distorts your nose, and I find I can't see my ears. I'm all face, and that's just not flattering. As I take a step back and then zoom in, which of course I can't do on my iPhone, the proportion of the face looks much better. Your nose is smaller, your forehead's smaller, and then your ears appear. Do you remember the episode of South Park a long time ago where they did close-ups of dogs shot with a wide-angle lens? Do you remember
that
one?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's just what it is. Everybody's so distorted, and it's just an awful look. So go out and try that. Take a picture of somebody, zoom in with your lens, and then take some steps back. Now, with a roller coaster to shoot with a wide angle for landscape, that doesn't really work, unfortunately. And then the other thing is, I'm stuck with the constraints of the amusement park. If there's a walkway or a building behind me, I might not be able to step back. So it doesn't always work, but go ahead and try it. Well, I think that's about it for this week. Next week, we'll talk about the histogram. We'll talk a little bit about roller coasters. I just went to Lagoon Amusement Park in Salt Lake City. They have 9 coasters. I mean, how many other amusement parks in the U.S. have 9 coasters or more? They're not that many. So,
not many that are not corporate parks.
Exactly. So a little non-corporate park most people have never heard of, and some really fun rides. So check back for the next podcast. We'll talk about Lagoon. We'll talk about histograms, and we'll talk about whatever the Rogers brothers want to talk about. So anyway, Jeff, thanks for your help.
See you later.
Everybody, thanks for listening. Go out, go ride some coasters, go listen to some good music. Go out and take some pictures. Do all at once if you can. Whatever you do this week, go out and have some fun. Bye-bye now. So I don't get sued for using his music. That music was recorded by my brother Jeff when he was a senior in high school. Man, it must be nice to be talented.